See you today. I'm very glad to be back. I was gone last week, and I'm appreciative to our district for allowing me to go to a leadership conference with a bunch of other pastors. It was a great time. I also want to express my appreciation publicly to Jessica. Thank you for preaching last week. I think she did a fantastic job, a sermon which I think is very applicable for all of us. And maybe if you missed it last week, it's a good chance to go check it out. I actually can't check it out online. You just missed it. Sorry, we didn't get that one recorded. So I just remembered. So unfortunately, you missed it. You can ask her what she talked about, and maybe she'll tell you. Give you some tips. So thank you. She did a fantastic job. I was actually blessed by that. I was on the shuttle bus. I was on the shuttle bus with all these pastors, and a lot of them are churches about our size, and we're talking. And the question, of course, inevitably comes up, what are you going to do on Sunday? It's right there. Right, they're all asking that question. And I said, well, actually, I have a whole bunch of these people that are willing to step up and lead and talk. And Jessica's one of those. And Mike and Doug. And Gerald's here. So we have a lot of people in our church that are deep, that know God well, and are willing to talk about it. And I'm appreciative of that significantly. Some of those people were like, well, I don't know. There's this guy. And I asked him, and sometimes he doesn't show up. We'll find out in a couple minutes if he made it. And I'm like, that's an interesting way to have a church service, but you'd be really dependent on God moving, I guess, if no one showed. But anyway, okay, that's off topic, but I wanted to say. So we're going to start a new series. I was going to do one more week of characters, but I really felt pressed to do this. A series kind of on the home. Bless this home. Who wants to have a home that is blessed? Put your hand up. I'm going to assume if you didn't put your hand up. You're not saying you want your home to be cursed. Right? I'm going to assume you just don't like to raise your hand. That's my guess. We all kind of do, right? We want our home life to be a place that is blessed, that God is present, that we can feel him moving. But if we said, what is the term that might most describe our home or our neighbor's homes, or the homes of so many that we encounter, is that the first word we might use? Is blessed the word that we would think of when we think of those things? We might. We also might not. We might hear things more like, wow, those guys are really struggling. They're really just making it month to month. You know, the marriage there is not what it really could be. Or I don't think they really knew how hard it was going to be to have kids, right? Or all sorts of different things. Or maybe that's how we describe the family and the home relationship. And admittedly, life is pretty challenging. If we look at home life now, especially say compared to 50 or 100 years ago, and the dynamics of things we have to struggle with, now we have a lot of new things, or newer things in our culture. We have more blended families, where there's a new dynamic in trying to establish a home life. We have many, many more single parents who are superheroes, but that's hard. How do you balance work, providing for your family? You have to be the disciplined person, but also the fun person. How do you do all that? That's a tough dynamic. We even have more parents now who are both working full-time, and that's not necessarily bad, it's just different. And how do we navigate that? As parents, as husband and wife, and how do we live in a home that puts God first in those moments and honors him and is blessed? That's what we're going to try to talk about in this series. Because I think our families can be environments where we feel and see tangibly the blessings of God. They're present strongly in our homes. So we're going to look at three different of the Beatitudes from Mark, Matthew, chapter 5, and relate them specifically to our homes and our relationships within our family. And I think we're going to see that they might have some significant things to say about what our families look like. So this week, we're going to look at Matthew 5, verse 6 as our kind of touchstone, cornerstone point for this sermon. So Matthew 5, verse 6. It says this, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be fulfilled." Other translations say they will be satisfied. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be fulfilled. They will be satisfied. What a great word picture of eating and of being fulfilled. Some of you might have noticed this from some Facebook posts, but while I was in Chicago, I had to do the thing that you must do while you're in Chicago, which is eat pizza, right? I mean, you have to. So who's ever been to Chicago and had like Chicago-style pizza? Maybe you didn't have it there. Maybe you at least had it somewhere. Okay. Well, I knew this was coming. that we were going to have pizza on the second night of this trip, and we were going to go to Giordano's, kind of this right Chicago-style pizza place. And I knew it was going to be thick and fat and a lot of cheese and a lot of stuff, and I probably should prepare for this. So I spent the night before at dinner, I ate fairly light. The next morning, I didn't have a huge breakfast. I had a salad for lunch because I knew it was coming for dinner, right? And I was excited. Like, if you've ever eaten that pizza, you like it. It's delicious. But it's also so cheesy, greasy, amazing that I knew I was going to consume about 3,000 calories in two pieces, right? Like, it is crazy pizza. But picture this part of it. I knew it was coming for a couple days. I prepared for the fact that we were going to go there. I had not eaten as much, so I was a little extra hungry. And then put yourself in my place, and then you walk in the door of the restaurant. You walk into that place, and you smell that pizza, and all of a sudden that hunger level just shot to a new level, right? I mean, you're like, get this on my table now. So you have to go sit. I mean, because you can see in the kitchen, too, as you see him pulling these pizzas out. Anyway, so we order. Then you have to sit there for another 20 minutes while your mouth is watering, just hoping that their pizza gets done fast. And finally it comes, right? And you get to eat this pizza. There was a sense of hungering there that wasn't just about food, really, was it? It was actually this thing I had set myself up for. And I was kind of my whole person interested in really wanting this pizza, even though I was only going to eat it. There was a deep sense of, unfortunately, a deep sense of longing for pizza, right? If that's the word picture, though, because I left there filled. I mean, I knew what I was going to get. And I left there, I didn't want to eat anymore by the time I left, right? If that's the word picture we see in Matthew 5, that kind of hungering, that kind of thirsting after righteousness, you could say after all that God has for us, after seeking Him, after making Him first, that level of hunger, that level of thirst, if that's anything like wanting my pizza that night, that's a different kind of hunger, I think, than often we associate that word with. Jesus said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst, like I did for that pizza, for righteousness. Why? Because they will be filled. They will be satisfied. One commentator said it this way: the righteousness in this passage that he seeks is the state of a person who is as he ought to be. Everything he is as God designed him or her to be. That we would seek that level of connection and closeness to God, and that we would hunger for that. Not that I'm saying you'll get it overnight. That's not what it says. It says you're hungering and thirsting to hopefully get it, to seek God for it. So here's my question to start today. In your home, in your family, what do you hunger for? What is the thing that in your home is the hunger of your family? Is the thing that you thirst for? Maybe if you live alone, what is it in your apartment? What is it at your work? What is it if you don't have kids, just with your spouse? If you're brutally honest, don't make stuff up. I don't want any like church answers like, Jesus, right? Because I just asked the question. I don't want that answer. It's not about me. What is it really? If you stepped back from your life and said, what do I really actually hunger for? What does our family really hunger for? Maybe I'll make it easier. Just think of the last week. In the last week in your life, what were you pursuing? What was the thing that you were the most hungry for? Now, granted, 1 week is never a sample of your whole life. So there could be some things this week that were a little extra pressing. That happens. But as a whole, what was the thing that really drove your family? Was it just trying to take it easy and relax and kind of live the American dream? Man, we work during the week so we can do whatever we want on the weekend, right? We want to have a good time. Is that kind of the theme that drives your family? Is it characterized by seeking comfort? Does your family look for opportunities to feel like there's no threat and like it's at peace and it's comfortable? It sounds kind of junior high-ish, but is it popularity? I don't mean that in the sense of like if we voted, you'd be number one. I mean, like, do you seek to be the family that people want to be around? Do you seek to be the family that everyone likes? Is that your goal? Is that the thing you hunger for? Is it about image management? We want our family to look the best. Our house needs to be the nicest or the most manicured. Our kids need to look and act a certain way. But if you really got with us behind the scenes, that's not really what we're like. Or maybe it's just kids in general or your spouse in general. Maybe it's sports. I've known some people, right? Hey, Nate, guess what? My kid is the champion underwater synchronized swimming for four-year-olds, right? He's on the traveling team, right? We can make it the thing we hunger for. It's not bad if my kid's involved in synchronized swimming. It could actually be good. But is it the thing my family has centered our life around? Is it the thing we hunger and thirst for? Because I think if most of us were honest, we could probably say there are some things during the week other than God we hungered for, that we were pursuing over him in our family. But Jesus says, when you pursue, when you seek, when you hunger and thirst me, righteousness, all I have for you, that's when you'll find filling. That's when you'll find that you are actually full. So what do you do if you feel like that's not the thing you're hungering for? Well, it's an easy answer that's really hard to do, and that's that you change your appetite, right? Have you ever been, I was actually just this week around someone who changed their appetite. Isaac, who happens to be my DS, is kind of like my boss in a sort of way, but he had a heart attack about a year or so ago now. And so because of that, he had to change his whole diet, right? Which he wasn't excited about. He loved grease and cheese and fat and all that stuff that we like to eat, right? Salt, put salt on everything, even though salt was already on everything. I mean, that kind of stuff. So now he's a year in to having to eat pretty much fish, vegetables, lightly seasoned things, chicken, very little red meat, like all this stuff, right? So he doesn't have to have another of these heart surgeries. And I asked him at dinner one of the nights, I said, have you found that your appetite is different, that you actually want different food now? To which he said, well, sometimes I still want a cinnamon roll. But he said, in general, yes. Like when I go to dinner now, my first inclination is not I want the fattiest thing on the menu or the saltiest thing on the menu. But now my first inclination is that fish and vegetable sounds good all of a sudden, which it never would have to him before. His appetite changed because he started to make a difference in the things he was eating. If you start pursuing God in your home and hungering and thirsting for him, I think you'll find that by walking that way, being led by his spirit in your home, by involving his presence in the things that you do in your family, that the junk food things of life will start to not feel like you want them anymore. Your appetite will start to change because it will seem like it won't satisfy anymore. So how do we do that? How do we begin to make the change? I want to give you three things. Two of them I don't believe will work, but I want to talk about them. The other one is, I think, maybe one of the only ways that will, specifically in your home. If you want your home to be a place that hungers and thirsts after righteousness, after all God has for you and your family, the first thing I don't think will work is what we usually call legalism, being all about the rules. If your home is a place where it is characterized by the idea of doing this and not doing that, God said this, so you must do it, and there's a very rigid sense of rules, but there is no focus on the relationship with God or on growing that deep desire to know him more than actually acting correctly, it won't work. A quote from a pastor I heard one time said it this way, rules without a relationship leads to rebellion. That when we try to make following God into a bunch of rules, eventually it's not going to work. We have to focus on the relationship and let the other come as we do. Is your home all about the rules? Is it legalistic? I don't know. Only you would know. But it's not going to work in creating an environment in your home that hungers and thirsts after God. But neither does lukewarm faith. Neither does lukewarm faith. There are homes which are Christian in name, but when you walk inside of them, have little to nothing to do with following Christ. And I can't tell you if this is your home, because only you can tell me if it's your home. I can tell you things in our home. If they started happening, I could say, man, I think we're probably headed that direction toward not valuing or being passionate enough about our faith. If I can't remember, and there's been times, if I can't remember the last time that I prayed with my wife and not like rub-a-dub-dub, thanks for the grub, right? Like, if I can't remember the last time I actually prayed about something that was meaningful in life, about something we were looking for God to lead us in. And I haven't always been great at that. And there's been times I've had to be honest with God. I'm still not amazing. I mean, we're working on that too. But if I can't even remember the last time I did it, that could be a sign for me. If I never have conversations with Maria about things God is leading me to or teaching me or talking to me about, or that I was reminded of when I read his word again today, or as I read this book about this guy who was living his faith out and it challenged me, if I never have a conversation like that, I would be a little concerned that I'm headed to a place of being lukewarm. If my faith in our home is not a compelling factor in the decisions we make, if it's not a compelling factor in how we spend our money, if it's not a compelling factor in what kind of movies and shows we watch, if it's not a compelling factor in the decisions we make in our home, I'd be a little nervous that I'd be headed down the road to being lukewarm. Just saying I'm a Christian, but nothing in my life looks like it. It doesn't take much to call yourself a Christian. It takes a lot more to make Christ the center of your home. There's a difference between just saying I believe in God and stuff and saying, no, Jesus isn't just a part of our lives. He is the very center of all that we are. He is the very center of all that we do. Jesus didn't say, blessed are those who follow me when it's convenient, right? Who talk about me in their home when it's easy. He said, blessed are those whose hunger and thirst is deep for righteousness for me. David said it in Psalm 63:1 like this, oh God, you are my God. I earnestly search for you. My soul thirsts for you. My whole body longs for you in this parched and weary land. What would that look like for your family? We earnestly search for God. Our souls thirst for him. Our whole family longs for God to be the center. What does that look like? I think the one thing that does work is to make Christ the center. To make Christ the center of your home. Being a Christ-centered home can work. Craig Groeschel said it this way one time. If you're going to do that in your family, he said you have to help your family see God as loving, as approachable, and as involved. That your goal to create a Christ-centered home is to say, God is someone who loves us. He loves me. He loves my wife. He loves my kids. I don't have any. I'm just saying if I did. Right? God loves us. But he's also approachable. We can come to him. He wants us to come to him. We can have that relationship where we go to him in times. And not only that, he's involved. He wants to be involved in every aspect of life with us. Whether it's silly things or serious things, he wants to be involved. Help your family see God as loving, as approachable, and as involved. Same guy that said that quote asked his 17-year-old daughter, after years of living in that kind of a home where he had really strived to create that environment, and he asked his daughter, what would you tell people at 17 to create a home that is centered around Christ, that is seeking and hungering and thirsting for righteousness? And she at 17 said this to him. She said, you should create an environment where your kids want to have discussions about God so it's not something they feel like they have to do. It's something they want to do. We create an environment that hungers and thirsts. I think our kids and our spouses and even ourselves will be pulled into wanting relationship with God. So I never like to leave you without some very practical things. So I'm going to give you three. Three things I think you can do very practically in your home to hunger and thirst after God. The first one is start involving God in your daily conversations as a family. Involve God in your daily conversations. It's so easy to go for a whole day and never mention or talk about what he's doing in our life and in our family. It may even feel weird at first if you never do it, which it'll feel weird because you never do it, right? So it might feel weird. It will feel weird. But instead of driving to school in the morning and you see that awesome sunrise and you're like, oh, that's so beautiful, which it is, and that's a good thing to say. Maybe instead you just say, isn't God amazing? Look at that. Do you see that, kids? Do you see that? That's awesome. It's not a big difference. But it's enough difference to say God has a part in what's going on in our family, and we need to turn our attention to Him in those moments. When you hit that hard point in life, whether it's marriage or with kids, there's always some. When you hit that point, instead of just having the conversation, well, what do? How do we handle it? We could list our pros and cons and all those things, and you probably should eventually. But maybe the conversation starts with, how do you think God wants us to handle this? Involve Him in the conversation. Do we need to pray about it before we make a decision? Little ones and big ones, dinner table conversations to the serious ones, to the ones after sports games. Involve God in conversations. Not in some weird or forced way. I'm not asking you to be ridiculous about it. But honestly, just as you go through life, talk about your relationship with God. Involve God in your daily conversations. I think that's the first thing you can do. The second thing I think you can do, not everybody likes this one, but I think you need to make church a non-negotiable for your family. If Christ is the center of your home, if that's the goal, if the goal is for us to hunger and thirst for righteousness, church can't be a negotiable thing. To spend 1 hour a week worshiping the God who we believe created the world, who sustains us, who gives us the grace and strength for life, and to commit only 1 week seems like a very small amount to pay. And I know there's times when you can't make it. That's life. Physically, you can't make it. Sometimes you're not even in the town that we're in, right? How can you make it to church? You might find this funny. I don't always do it. I obviously have to be here every Sunday, but there's sometimes when we're gone, or I will be gone for a Sunday, it would seem really easy in those moments not to go to church. It would seem easy because I'm here all the time. But I find that I want to be in a church building on Sunday morning. Not because I have to be there, but because that relationship with God to me matters so much more than anything else I could do with that morning. And I want to be somewhere where He will speak to me, where His word is open and proclaimed, and I will be challenged in my small thinking to think bigger of Him, to grow deeper with Him, and I need that. Do you make that same level of effort in your family so that church is not negotiable? Maybe it's when you go camping and you're gone for a Sunday, you say, on Sunday morning, we're going to pull out our Bible. And because church is not negotiable for us, we're going to sit down and have a conversation together about this passage. We're going to read this and say, what does this mean for our family? We're going to talk about that, and we're going to pray about that. Maybe we'll even turn some songs on the radio and we'll sing. I don't know. Whatever it is that works for your family to make that a priority in your life. Hebrews 10 would say it this way, let us not give up meeting together. Because he says what? Some are in the habit of doing that. If we want to grow a hunger and a thirst for God, church has to be non-negotiable. I think the third thing that you have to work to do in your family to hunger and thirst for righteousness is show them that seeking God can be fun. Right? It can be fun. Don't make it serious all the time, because I don't think God's serious all the time. He enjoys our humor moments as much as He enjoys our serious ones. And there has to be times, I think especially for kids, that you show them that faith can be fun and that God calls us to exciting things. And that when we do those things, there's filling, like the verse said, on the other side. There's satisfaction on the other side. I heard of a family one time that was kind of trying to figure out how to make prayer a part of their life. And so what they would do is it seems cheesy, but it worked awesome for them and everybody loved it. So they'd make a bowl of popcorn. And basically the rule was you get to eat a couple pieces of popcorn and then we're going to pray, all of us. And while we're praying, your goal while you pray is to try to steal a piece of popcorn while you're praying, and no one sees you, and then we're all going to eat some more popcorn when we're done. It's silly and it's little, right? But all of a sudden in their family, prayer became something their whole family wanted to do. It became something that their kids wanted to get involved in because they got popcorn. But they were learning how to pray. They were learning how to make that a part of life. Maybe you need to make a system of prizes for kids. Hey, memorize these verses. I'll give you a lollipop. I don't know what's exciting to kids, right? Probably a new video game. Make systems that make it fun for people to grow in your family in faith. Serve together. Maybe you know you're going to go out for dinner. somewhere together and say, before we do that, we're going to serve. We're going to do something meaningful in service to others. We're going to express our faith that way, and then we're going to go to dinner and see what kind of conversations that raises for your kids and for you and your spouse. I'll encourage you, particularly if you have kids, find a Bible that you can read to them that's not ridiculous. I don't mean that in a bad way, but if we try to read certain scriptures to little kids, it's just they just are over their heads, and certain translations don't work real well. There's a great, great resource out called the Bible app for kids. It's free. You can get it on any tablet, any phone, any anything, and your kids can read scripture in a way that makes perfect sense to them. They've animated those things. There's games that follow up on reading so they can actually engage some of that stuff too. Find ways to engage every member of your family in ways that aren't boring, in ways that are fun. I think people will often say, I don't know how to make Christ the center of my family. Well, I think you can start in these things. Can you make God a part of your conversations? I think you can. Can you make church a priority? Yeah, you can. Can you show that it's fun and it's a blessing to serve and follow where God's leading? Yeah, I think you can do those things. It's not easy, but I think you can do it. And you have to make the choice to do it, or it won't ever happen. Joshua said, and I'll close with this, in Joshua 25:15, he said it this way, so choose for yourself. You're going to serve someone, right? You've heard that song. Choose yourselves this day whom you'll serve, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. It's intentional. You have to work at it. But Jesus says, if that's the thing that drives your hunger and your thirst, you'll find fulfillment in a way you never could from everything else. You choose today, you choose the next day, you choose the next day, and you choose the day after that. What is going to define your home? Blessed are those who hunger, who thirst, who long for righteousness, for all that God wants for them, for they will be filled, Jesus said.